Hi, and welcome to the Palliators Podcast. I'm your host, fellowship-trained hospice and palliative medicine physician, Dr. Tara Kateen. This podcast is for healthcare professionals who want to become more comfortable and more confident in caring for their chronically ill and terminally ill patients. With the help of the physicians who trained with me, we hope to provide education and to promote palliative care one podcast at a time. We're so glad to have you here. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. I have a special guest with me today. Her name is Shannon Donovan. She has a master's in social work and is a licensed clinical social worker. She has an extensive background in hospice care and is currently working at Eisenhower Army Medical Center, working with a variety of patients, including those with terminal illnesses. She works closely with the medical residents in training to help them learn more about how to treat the whole patient and how to better understand the needs of a patient and a family during a medical crisis. She is also on faculty at Augusta University in the Department of Criminal Justice, Sociology, and Social Work, where she teaches a course called Death and Dying. She often presents on the topic of grief, and she's won a number of awards for her work. Today, we are talking about grief. Welcome to Shannon Donovan.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be here.
I'm glad you could be here.
Yeah, me too. I love your podcast. I've been listening to it, and I really have enjoyed everything that you've talked about so far.
Oh, my gosh. Well, thanks. I don't know what to say. I'm blushing. But, you know, you've done a lot of work and a lot of teaching on grief, mm-hmm. and I love the name of your course, Death and Dying. It seems very Elizabeth Kubler-Rossi.
Yes, yes.
And that's always what I think about when I think about grief and working through it. Is that where you would start when you talk about grief, or how do you get off the ground when you're teaching about grief or helping people?
Well, yeah, I think that that would definitely be a good place to start. I think Elizabeth Kubler-Ross is really probably more like what you could say is like the mother of the five stages of grief and really introduce that concept to everybody. And she's the person and the reason that everybody, I think the most lay people tend to understand even what the five stages of grief are.
I know that there are the five stages and you don't have to necessarily go through them in any particular order, but is there an order that you generally like to put them in or categorize when you are teaching?
So I just present what Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's research is, and maybe I should back up for a minute and just for those people who are not familiar, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross was a physician and psychiatrist, and she actually did extensive work where she interviewed terminally ill patients. And one of the main things she found was that people who are dying need to talk about it. And then she, from discussing their experiences with them, she realized that there is a stage of grieving that they go through, particularly five stages. And she put them in a particular order. Some people use the mnemonic DABDA, the D-A-B-D-A, which is denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance.
And my understanding is you can go back and forth. You don't just go through a stage, graduate from it, and go on to the next one. But you can even go back and visit other stages?
Correct, yes. That sometimes a lot of people have misunderstood her work and that they felt like it's something like you start at one stage, go to the next, and then go to the next. And she said that it's not a linear process, that it is something that some people don't even hit every stage, that every person is unique in their grieving process.
Now, the grieving stages that she studied were really with people who were the sick, the terminally ill patients. She didn't study grief in people who were family members or going to grieve after the patient died. Is that correct?
That's correct. But the five stages have actually now been also applied to what family members go through, sometimes even starting, that's more called anticipatory grief. You could do an entire podcast on just that. But that was more on that the five stages can be applied to the family members while the patient is still living, but certainly what their grieving process is after the death.
Stages of grief don't even just have to apply to people who are ill or the people who are experiencing illness. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. Many times, really, I mean, we may not realize it, but we grieve about really any type of significant loss. Anytime that we've lost something that we've invested in or have an attachment to. And if you'd like, I can give you an example of going through the five stages that's not related to grief. And sometimes it's a good place to start to really kind of understand.
I like it. Let's do it.
So the scenario that I actually give to my class is an example of the five stages of grief that one goes through when you experience something that most of us have experienced, which is you have a dead car battery, right? And you get up in the morning and you leave for work and you get out to your car and you try to start your car and it just doesn't work, right? The car doesn't start. And what is the very first thing you do? You try to start your car again,
right?
Which is the ultimate part of denial, which is, no, that can't be right. No, of course my car is going to start.
This can't be happening.
right. So I have to, you start it again, and then you may try it again, and then again, right? And you do all the things, all the little tricks, like you make sure you've turned off the radio and the heater and the lights, right?
Right.
You've tried to conserve all the power, and then you try to start your car one more time. It's like you're in denial. Like, there's no way my battery is dead.
Been there.
Yes. And then once you kind of are out of denial, then you start to realize you've moved into anger. And maybe some expletives may come out of your mouth.
Never.
And, you know, you think, you know, you get mad. You may slam your hand on the steering wheel. You may yell. And you know, you start to get really angry because you're thinking this is going to affect my entire day. I don't have time for this. And this just needs to work.
Yes. I have done all those things.
Right. And then we go into bargaining, and bargaining is when you're realizing that, okay, you're probably going to be late for work, that this is now going to impact most of your morning. And so then you start almost kind of begging is really probably the more way we think of it, not as bargaining, but you think you're kind of pleading with your car, like, okay, please just, you know, start one more time. That's all I need. Or you're sitting there sometimes thinking, please, God, just let my car start one more time. As soon as it does, then I will just drive straight to the dealership and I will get a new battery. You know, I just don't want to have to tow my car. Right.
Well, I feel like you were in the car with me.
I know, right? And then sometimes then we go into depression and we realize, okay, well, what am I going to do? What am I going to do now? It's I think sometimes, you know, she didn't say this, but I think sometimes depression begins to look very a little bit like the beginning of acceptance as well. But you begin to accept the reality of, okay, what am I going to do? I'm going to be late for work. But it may be a little bit of resignation of, you know what, I give up. You know, I don't really care anymore. What's the use? And you kind of sit and wallow for a minute.
I think I may have shed a tear or two.
Right, exactly. And then you move into acceptance, which is you've kind of said, okay, well, you know, I have a dead battery, and now I need to handle it. And so what do I need to do? And so I need to call an auto club and get my car towed somewhere, or I need to call a friend and say I need to, you know, get a ride to work, and then I'll address the issues with the dead battery later.
Right.
Yeah. Now, of course, when we grieve, we don't normally go through those stages as quickly. Related to a car battery, that's going through the stages maybe in about a, you know, 5 to 15 minute period.
You know, it can take anywhere from 15 minutes to the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it can. I think that that's what she meant by saying that it's not a linear process. I think that, you know, one of your, I think previous podcasts, you talked about how you actually tell a patient, you know, what their diagnosis is and what their prognosis is. And I think that you can see a patient very quickly, even initially, go through, maybe a sentence or two that sounds like denial, and then a reaction of maybe their anger, and they have an angry outburst towards the physician or just the circumstances, and then into the bargaining, depression, and even the acceptance. I think that they can do that very quickly. I think they also go back through it, maybe even more in depth as they process through the process of dying.
And how do we help our patients and their families with their grieving?
That's a great question. I think the most important thing, coming from the social work perspective, it's a very social work concept to say that we meet patients where they're at. So what that means is if we meet the patient and the patient is obviously in denial, then we start with them in denial. And it is not our job to try and move them out of denial into another stage. It's our job just to support them in whatever stage they're in.
And denial serves its own purpose in their coping.
It does. It does. And Elizabeth Kubler-Ross says that they are, in a sense, they are defense mechanisms, and that in a way, sometimes denial allows our brain to just only allow us to process only what we can handle at that current time until we can handle a little bit more. And also not to refer to patients as, you know, that patient who's in denial, or you know, that real angry patient, that we don't refer to them as whatever stage they're in, just like we wouldn't necessarily say that cancer patient or the breast cancer patient or the congestive heart failure patient, that we refer to the patients by their name.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yep. Meeting people where they are for anything, I mean, it applies not just to grief, but in so many other things in life. And letting people move through the stages at their own pace and supporting them through is one of the important things that we can do for them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And sometimes I get caught up in their grief. I mean, is there something that I should be doing if I'm dealing with somebody who's grieving, other than, you know, shedding a tear with them? That's okay. And
yes, actually. I mean, I've been kind of in preparation for the podcast today. I went back, and Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, if you enjoy this information and want to read up more on it, her first book was On Death and Dying. And that's where she really talks in depth about the five stages of grief and gives patient examples of each of the stages. And then she has a follow-up book or a companion book to that that's called Questions and Answers on Death and Dying. And I was reading through it today, and that's they're questions that have been presented to her from you. Most of the questions are from professionals in the field, whether they're nurses, physicians, social workers, or chaplains. And that's what and those questions come up, and that's what they encourage the healthcare provider to do, is to be honest with your own feelings and support the patient, again, wherever they are, and that it's okay to cry, it's okay to express your emotion, as long as you don't, as the professional, cross into the realm of it becoming almost unhealthy, where you don't want the patient, the terminally ill patient, to now be consoling you.
Right.
Because oh my goodness. You're so upset.
Yes. That's a terrible predicament to be in. For the patient, and one that we should never be in.
Mm-hmm. But I think expressing our emotions in front of the patient, it's human connection, and I think patients appreciate that.
Is there something that people can do to turn their grief into something positive?
So there is something that I teach in my death and dying class that isn't necessarily related to the five stages of grief, but it is something that is kind of accepted that patients tend to do, and both patients who are terminally ill, but also sometimes family members after the death as well, go through this. And they say that it's making meaning or finding meaning. And that is when the patient has to, and I think that sometimes comes for people in the stage of acceptance. And what they're doing is they're finding when sometimes with the anger stage is when patients are asking, why me? And I think in the acceptance stage, by making meaning is you have begun to kind of figure out, maybe this is why it was me. Maybe this is why it is me. And this is how I can make the situation a positive or make something positive come out of it.
So what do you do if someone's sort of stuck in a stage? Do you feel the need that, or should we feel the need to kind of push them through? Is there something that we need to do to help them if you feel like they're stuck?
Actually, directly, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross would say that that's one of the questions. What do you do if throughout the whole dying process, this is direct from her book, what do you do if throughout the whole dying process the patient remains in the stage of denial? And she very simply and directly answers it and says, naturally allow the patient to stay in the stage of denial and treat him or her just like any other patient. Something that I have found useful sometimes is that if the patient's not really willing to talk about their own dying, not that I'm trying to force them to talk about it, but it's helpful sometimes that what I will do is kind of use a what-if scenario and say, so I'm a little bit going down the path of denial with them, but then I'm also kind of trying to introduce the path of acceptance, right? And try to open them up to that process. So I'm saying, you know, I understand that, you know, this, you disagree, or, you know, you don't think that the test is correct, but, you know, what, let's just say for a little bit here, what if the test were correct? What then? Or what would that experience be like for you? And I think sometimes that's a safe way for the patient to still kind of stay in denial and but yet kind of pretend that it's true. They talk about that with children too sometimes, even children who are dealing with their own terminal illness, or even children who are, if you have a hard time, children sometimes it's difficult to broach a very sensitive topic with them. And sometimes what they suggest is that what's safer for children, because children don't like to feel vulnerable, and they shouldn't, of course, but is that you find a children's book that deals with the topic that you're trying to broach with them, and you read the book. And then rather than talking to them and saying, you know, how would you feel? What do you feel about this? You don't talk about them. Say the character in the book was Charlie. Then instead you talk to them and you say, wow, that must have been really tough for Charlie. How do you think Charlie felt about that? And so they feel safer talking about Charlie,
right?
But not talking about themselves. And so that's kind of where I get that from, is sometimes I will pose that same question with patients or with a family member and say, you know, it may not be true, but what if? What if it were?
That's a good tip. Mm-hmm. I'll be sure to use it. I won't give you credit for it, though. Sorry.
That's okay.
And so... You know, for all of you, I'm going to put the titles of these books in the show notes. There's also a little video link that I'm going to put in there to YouTube that Shannon has sent to me that is kind of funny about grief, mm-hmm. and I think you'll enjoy it. There's also a link that I might put in there for a blog that talks about grief.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So that y'all will have these things to ruminate on once the podcast is over. Mm-hmm. I think that's it for today. Do you think there's anything else that you want to make sure we go home with? I'll take that as a no. Thank you for being with me today, Shannon. I've had so much fun. And in case you can't tell, I know Shannon personally, and I just think she's the bomb. And thank you for coming today.
Oh, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, Shannon, don't you have our reflection for today?
I sure do, actually. So I have one of my favorite apps is The Language of Letting Go by Melody Beatty. And there she actually has a devotional. And at the very end of the devotional where she talks about grief, is she says, grief is a cleansing process. It's an acceptance process. It moves us from our past into today and into a better future.
I think that's really lovely. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And thank you all for joining us today. And please, if you've enjoyed this podcast, please go to your Apple Podcasts or iTunes app and give us a rating and write us a review. And follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And we'll see you next time, or listen to us next time. Bye for now.